True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes real.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What is up? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, September 8th. Frank Sample joined by the returning Scotty Dubs, Scott White, here to recap the past couple of days in fantasy baseball. Got some players. Do these guys actually matter? Some prospects being called up. I want to ask Scott about the drop-o-meter. We're going to fire that up as well. Thanks again to Justin Mason for joining us on Sunday night on Monday morning's podcast. Once again, do appreciate that. Scott, long weekend for your boy. How you doing, man? How was it?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. Beach weekend with the family. Spent the weekend on Sanibel Island off the Gulf Coast of Florida. So, you know, if you wonder where people who live in Florida go on vacation, the answer is other parts of Florida. That's how it works. Did some floating in the ocean, did a little paddle boarding, did a little kayaking.
Are you a big beach guy?
No, I wouldn't say I'm a big beach guy. No, I would definitely, you know how some people are about the beach. That's definitely not me. But I can have a good time at the beach. I did. I would do it again.
All right. Nice. A little bit more positivity from Scott than I'm used to. I honestly was not expecting you to enjoy the beach. So happy to hear that. Vacationing in other parts of Florida. But
That's right. We
are here to catch people up on fantasy baseball. So let's do that. Oh, my goodness gracious. From Tuesday, Monday, the past couple of days. I don't know. Let's figure it out.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott, where are we starting?
We're starting with Alejandro Kirk. Mr. Kirk, I kind of want to call him Captain Kirk, but I don't know if that's Alejandro Kirk hit two home runs here on Tuesday evening. His sixth and seventh home runs of the season. Yeah, I have that right. Sixth and seventh home runs of the season. And he got the start at DH, but he's been playing a lot of catcher recently. It was his second third hit game in a row. He hit a home run in the other one as well as hitting a double. His batting average is up to 290 on the year. And entering Wednesday, Alejandro Kirk had an 11.7% strikeout rate on the year. This is a strikeout rate that compares to players like, you know, some of the best contact hitters in the game. Let me see if I can pull up a couple examples real quick. 11.7. So Adam Frazier's 11.5 strikeout rate. Tommy Edman, 12.9. Michael Brantley, 10.5. So, you know, Alejandro Kirk right in that mix. If he was a qualifier, he'd have the sixth best strikeout rate among hitters. And yet, you know, here he is hitting for power and, you know, quite a bit of power. Those seven home runs have come in 124 at bats. He's hitting the ball hard like a power hitter. I think his average exit velocity is like 92 miles per hour, high hard hit rate as well. And it's You know, it's somebody whose bat we were pretty excited about in spring training, even when he got called up last year, got, you know, brief look in the majors, spent some time injured this year. The Blue Jays have a lot of catcher depth, so the playing time hadn't been consistent until recently, but it looks like he's performing up to it now. It looks like he's getting the playing time and he's performing up to what we hope to see from him. It's a pretty strong offensive profile at a position where obviously we're always longing for that. So I think it's time. I think it's time to make a move for Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah, he's crushing the ball this year. You're absolutely right about that. I pulled up his Statcast page. Pretty damn impressive. His expected numbers, 296 XBA, 527 X slug. Pretty impressive for Alejandro Kirk. One of those home runs on Tuesday came off of Garrett Cole, too. We'll talk about Cole in a little bit. He clearly wasn't himself. He was dealing with a hamstring injury, but still impressive nonetheless to hit a home run off of Garrett Cole there for Alejandro Kirk. Scott, we're getting to that point in the year where, you know, if we play in a head-to-head points league or we play in any type of shallower format and it's one catcher league, I think you kind of just ride the hot hand unless you have one of the top, I don't know, three, four, five catchers. So would you be okay dropping, I'm looking over the last 28 days. Let me find some catchers who are really, really scuffling here. Like Gary Sanchez hit two home runs recently, but 2.4 fantasy points per game over his last 28 days. Is that a move that you would make? Would you prefer Kirk over Gary Sanchez?
I mean, that's not a horrible point per game average for a catcher.
Yep.
I think I'd stop short of dropping him for Kirk, but it's close.
How about Christian Vasquez, who's still rostered in 81% of leagues?
I have no idea why he's rostered in that many leagues still. Just the lack of options at catcher, I guess. But
yeah,
I don't know. We've been hyping plenty of others that you probably should have dropped Vasquez for a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a ton of names that are still just rostered in a ton of leagues. Omar Narvaez, 91%. Make that swap.
He's okay, but yeah, I could see going with the hot hand in Kirk.
Yadier Molina, 80% rostered.
Yeah, get him out of there.
Sean Murphy, 75%.
Yeah, he's losing too many at-bats now with Yan Gomes in the mix.
Last one here, Carson Kelly, 60%.
Yep, I'll take Kirk.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested there, and it's cheap exposure to one of the best lineups in baseball in Toronto. So every time I hear his name, I just want to hear the Lady Gaga song. Alejandro, Alejandro. Oh, man. All right, for me, oh, my goodness gracious, I'm going to talk about Jake Odorizzi, one of Scott's favorite starting pitchers. He didn't have a great performance. It was okay. It was, you know, it really wasn't eye-popping. What made me say, oh, my goodness gracious, were his projected matchups for next week. I'll get to that in just a second. Five innings, two runs, three strikeouts against the Mariners for Odorizzi in this one. Two earned runs or less in four straight starts for Big Jake here. Three of those starts came against the Mariners, one against the Texas Rangers. So clearly he can beat up on bad competition. Next week, if this works out, because, I mean, you know, things change and rotations get shuffled. So we'll check back in on this on Friday when you talk about two-star pitcher, Scott. But 68% rostered versus the Diamondbacks at the Rangers next week for Jake Odorizzi. So if that stands, and, you know, obviously we're playing for a lot right now. It's head-to-head playoffs are going on.
Yeah.
I love those matchups. So,
oh, yeah. You should love those matchups. Those are great matchups. As good as Odorizzi's been in his past four starts, not a single one of them have gone even six innings. So, that's,
yep.
I guess that's the water you can pour, the cold water you can pour on that. But you're right. I mean, the difficulty with waiver wire recommendations this time of year is that, you know, usually a lot of speculation goes into those. You're identifying ability, and then you're claiming it with the hope that that ability pays off at some point down the line. Well, down the line is off the table now. So you need pickups who can impact you right now. And I think with that two-star week, Odorizzi, even though I don't think he has a lot of ability, and I wouldn't want to put much faith in him long term, I think that makes sense. If he does end up making lining up for two starts, we'll see how the rest of the week plays out.
Yeah, we'll talk about it again on Friday when we take a look at some two start pitchers there. But as of now, looks like Jake Odorizzi, two fantastic matchups for next week. We don't trust the ability of Odorizzi, but we do trust the ability of these three starting pitchers, league winning pitchers who we've talked a ton about recently. Just keep on keeping on what they did on Tuesday. Just want to quickly hit these guys up at the top. Max Fried up against the Nationals, 6 innings, 1 run, 4 walks to 5 strikeouts. He didn't have his best stuff here, but that's 8 straight quality starts for Max Fried, a 1.76 ERA during that span. Blake Snell, 13 2/3 hitless innings in a row over his last two starts before giving up a 2-run single to Joe Adell in the 7th inning of Tuesday's start. He finishes that start 7 innings, 1 hit, 2 runs, 11 strikeouts for Blake Snell. He's got a 1.88 ERA, 65 strikeouts over 43 2/3 over his last seven starts for Blake Snell. And then Logan Webb survives Coors Field at the Rockies, 7 innings, 9 hits, 3 runs, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts. So ultimately, a pretty good start here. 9 straight quality starts for Logan Webb. Scott, anything you'd like to add on Fried, Snell, Webb? We talk about these guys quite a bit.
I mean, Blake Snell was perfect through, I don't know that he was quite perfect through six. He had a no-hitter still going.
He was perfect through six. Yeah,
perfect through six. And then he walked a guy in the 7th. And then he gave up hits, obviously. Or a hit. But yeah, I mean, it continues for Blake Snell, right? I mean, we were writing this guy off a month ago because he hadn't been able to put anything together this year or last, or really the year before. And then all of a sudden, he's figured it out. He's figured it out, and he looks like a must start the rest of the way. Now, it is worth mentioning that this lineup he was facing, the Angels lineup, was
very bad, and no Ohtani in the National League Park.
Right, no Ohtani. The top slugging percentage in the Angels lineup was .402.
Ooh-y.
By a guy named Jack Mayfield. It's a really bad lineup.
Yes, but, it is.
But one of what's been 4 7-inning starts in his past 6. One of them was against the Dodgers. He struck out 10, allowed 1 earned run on 3 hits. So obviously, you know, the other 2 were against the Diamondbacks. So, you know, he's not exactly, other than that Dodger start, which is doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, Snell hasn't been facing murderer's rows here. But over the last 3 years, this isn't the only time he's faced a bunch of bad lineups, and he wasn't doing things like this. So let's not nitpick too much.
Yeah. Come on. Don't poo-poo my man, Blake Snell. Not my man. I mean, we basically wrote him off, as you mentioned, Scott. But you talked about the 7-inning performances that he's put up recently. He has thrown over 100 pitches in 6 of his last 7 starts. So, I mean, San Diego, they simplified his pitch mix, or he simplified it. A lot of fastballs, a lot of sliders, mixing in the curveball there. But whatever he's doing, he's pitching a lot more efficiently, and they've basically just loosened the reins, and they're letting him go. So, again, Blake Snell looking like a must-start pitcher and potentially a league-winning starting pitcher here down the stretch. Before we hit the news and notes, the NFL has finally returned, and the Pick 6 podcast is your top audio destination for comprehensive coverage of the 2021 season. Join host Will Brinson and company for extensive game previews and all the picks you need, plus recaps immediately after Monday, Thursday, and Sunday night football games. That and much more coming this fall on the Pick 6 podcast feed. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever else podcasts are found. News and notes, Gerrit Cole left Tuesday's start with hamstring tightness. Per John Heyman, the early word is that the Yankees played it safe to get Cole out before the hamstring worsened, and the hope and even belief is that it's not too severe. So, I don't know. As of now, we don't know if he's going to make his next start, if he's going to be skipped in the rotation, if it's going to cause an IL stint, whatever it's going to be. But I saw that his fastball velocity on his final pitch was way, way down. So immediately my mind went, oh, God, please be okay. Nothing with the arm. But it turns out to be a hamstring injury here for Gerrit Cole. The Mets, from one ace to another, revealed that Jacob deGrom had been dealing with a partial tear of his right UCL. General manager Sandy Alderson expressed more optimism on Tuesday, noting that the issue resolved itself and the ligament is still intact. I'm not a doctor, Scott. Neither are you. No. I don't think it really works that way.
I mean, that's the impression I was under, too. Yeah, I mean, some of the quotes from Sandy Alderson are just whatever condition existed before, it's resolved itself. And okay, so this is one I pulled off here and tweeted out, because there's like a whole article from I think I got this from Newsday. Look, somebody goes out with a headline that it's a partial tear. That's what a bruise is. A bruise is a partial tear of the muscle, okay? So let's not go out there and write as if this is anything new. It's not. It's a very low-grade thing that has resolved itself. You know, okay, this is a ligament, not a muscle, first of all.
I don't know.
He was saying it's the lowest form of sprain there is, and MRIs since then has shown that it's gone. So I don't know. I mean, to me, the fear with Jacob deGrom is that they goof off all off season with this. They come back next spring. Oh, you know what? He does need Tommy John surgery after all. And then we're not seeing Jacob deGrom until the second half of 2023, when he's 35 years old, by the way. And I don't know. I don't know. Somebody was asking me who I'd keep today, Jacob deGrom or Bryce Harper. I didn't answer him because he doesn't have to decide today. But I'd probably keep Harper. I'm concerned enough about it that I think I'd say Harper. You know, I mean, I guess it's possible. People sprain their ankles, you know, and that's a ligament, right, that you're spraining? I don't know. I don't know enough, clearly. But my assumption was that once you got a little tear in that elbow ligament, it doesn't go away. And you can just kind of, it can be not so bad enough to require surgery, but that it doesn't just heal. But I am not a doctor.
Yeah, I mean, look, technically, a sprain of a ligament, we've heard this before, is a form of a tear, right? I mean, the extent of that, I guess nobody knows, but based on this, it sounds like they're not overly concerned, though. I mean, it's hard not to be. Jacob deGrom is throwing 101, 102 miles per hour. He's throwing 93, 94 mile per hour sliders. I mean, he's doing something that we've never seen before, and I'm sure he's going max effort on every pitch, or at least it seems like he is, so... Yeah, it would make sense. They're
going so far, and that quote I read from Sandy Alderson was what made it amazing. Wasn't even so much the bruise comparison, because okay, whatever, maybe. But he's saying that the reason they hadn't revealed this is because they didn't want it to be reported, because they knew the reports would exaggerate what they believe the damage is, just by that combination of, you know, sprain and UCL, you know?
Yeah.
So like, okay, we're going to tell you now, but we don't want you to make a big deal of it because it's not actually a big deal. I don't know. It's just, it's really bizarre.
Yeah. I don't feel good.
I don't feel good right now as somebody, if I'm invested in DeGrom in a dynasty league, I don't feel good at all with this news.
No, you shouldn't. And I mean, look, it sounds like they were just scared of the New York media, like blowing this out of proportion. But I mean, what's done is done. So, I mean, we'll see what happens as a result of this. But yeah, I mean, as much as I lean into early starting pitchers this year and elite starting pitchers and kind of paying up, it's too early to say, but my early diagnosis of the situation is that I'm going to take a step back next year, a big step back, because, I mean, there's a lot of pitchers early that have kind of dealt with injuries in the past, and I don't know. It's just kind of scaring me off, stuff like this. And DeGrom, he's not the only one. It's Yu Darvish, this whole sticky situation. We'll see what happens in the offseason, but...
Yeah, I mean, there are a few factors at work there for why it makes sense to dial that back some. I haven't gotten into the nitty gritty with it either.
Yeah.
Hit it. Part of the calculus there was that hitting was so plentiful. You could get it everywhere. It was just like the player pool was overgrown with great hitting, and that's proven not to be true anymore. So, you know, how much is the riskier proposition of pitching, how valuable is it by comparison? You know, I think we need to dive back into that.
Yes. We got to find those mid-round gems, Scott, those late-round gems, and trust the process, I think, for next year. That's something that I'm really kind of figuring out now. But we have all offseason to talk about that. Let's move on. Hyunjin Ryu apparently left Monday's start with left forearm tightness, another one here, after six scoreless innings against the Yankees. There's no word yet on whether he'll make his second start later this week against the Baltimore Orioles, but obviously forearm tightness, it's something that we have to monitor with Hyunjin Ryu. We had a bunch of White Sox news. Lucas Giolito, threw Tuesday at max effort and felt no issues with his hamstring. He'll have two bullpens to throw before he is back in the rotation. Lance Lynn threw a bullpen on Tuesday, and he will throw another one on Friday. He might be able to return after that one, so perhaps next week we see Lance Lynn. There is hope that Carlos Rodon can pitch this weekend against the Red Sox. He was skipped in the rotation earlier this week due to fatigue and general soreness is what they listed it as. There's currently no timetable for Tim Anderson, who is on the IL with a hamstring injury. Clayton Kershaw made a rehab start at AAA on Tuesday. Three innings, two runs, zero walks, two, three strikeouts. So, I mean, they seem pretty optimistic, everything that we've heard about Kershaw, which another one, he's dealing with an arm injury, but maybe he could finish out strong here and help us this season. Don't know what that'll look like yet for next season with Clayton Kershaw. This was a surprise to me. Fernando Tatis said on Tuesday that he does not anticipate undergoing shoulder surgery after the season, where we've heard the contrary all along from beat writers. I mean, it even sounded like the team was almost on board. Not that they've come out and said anything, but it kind of seemed like we were all in agreement here. And I thought this was a pretty big surprise, Scott.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise, too. Tatis did acknowledge that he still needs to talk to team doctors, the front office, and make a final determination. So I don't know if he was just kind of speaking off the cuff here, but I thought it was a foregone conclusion too.
Let's run through the rest of these. Angels manager Joe Maddon had no update Tuesday on when or if Mike Trout will be able to return this season. I doubt it. George Springer was out of the lineup after fouling a ball off of his knee on Monday. Trey Mancini was out of the lineup due to oblique soreness. Tony Gonsolin could be activated Thursday or Friday. He's 45% rostered. And Scott, I know Gonsolin's someone that you really liked early in the season. He came back. The ERA was good, but struggled with control. The whip was very high. Wasn't going deep into starts. Would you be looking to re-add Gonsolin anywhere?
I'm not going to say no, but that kind of gets back to what I was saying earlier, where I think Tony Gonsolin has a lot of ability. And if this was July or earlier, then of course. I mean, you may not be able to use him right away. He may still need to stretch out. But it's September, and there are three lineup blocks left, assuming your league plays out the full season right up through the very last week. There are just three lineup blocks left. And as much trouble as we saw, you know, as long as it seemed to be taking him to stretch out when he came back from the IL the first time, you know, I'm not confident he's going to give you any, even five inning starts, much less six. So I would call, he'd be far from a must add for me, even though, you know, I think he's good. I think he has the potential to be good.
Tyler Clippard went on the COVID IL with COVID-like symptoms. They haven't said if he actually tested positive, so they could just be playing it safe here. So we will see what happens there. If he misses any extended time, I believe it was Noe Ramirez who recently picked up a save when Tyler Clippard wasn't available. So in the deepest of category leagues, even with Spencer Howard and Dane Dunning back with the Rangers, Glenn Otto is expected to start Friday against the Angels. Do I have enough time to pull this up here? Let's see what I got. 1-800-GLENN-OTTO. Come on.
Pick up the phone. The call is free.
People really like that jingle, by the way, Scott. So good job by you. Nick Pivetta has tested positive for COVID and went to the IL. The Red Sox really dealing with a COVID outbreak here on their team. And I know that Xander Bogaerts is working his way back. A few others, Matt Barnes in the COVID IL. So yeah. Another one there with Nick Pivetta. Kwanghan Kim will move back to the bullpen, and Jake Woodford is expected to start on Thursday. Keibert Ruiz has sat out three straight games with a knee injury, though he did pinch hit on Tuesday. Kyle Lewis has a bone bruise in his right knee and is being shut down for the rest of the 2021 season. The year of the setback continues. John Gray is set to return Wednesday against the Giants. I would not want to start John Gray in any of my daily leagues. So the Giants are swinging a hot bat in Coors Field right now. I would not want to do that. Connor Joe recently received a PRP injection. He landed on the IL over the weekend with a mild hamstring strain, which causes us pain, Scott, because we were very excited about Connor Joe.
Yeah, that one hurt. That one hurt.
Something that does not hurt, especially your Braves. Charlie Morton agreed to a one-year contract extension, and that means that we'll have him for at least one more year in fantasy, and he's been really good. So I don't know, just off the top of my head, I mean, probably a top 20, top 25 starting pitcher heading into next year. He's pitched really well with the Atlanta Braves. Some prospects, Scott, I wanted to ask you about. Luis Gil will make his return to the Yankees and start on Wednesday. And I don't know if this means Nestor Cortez will be moving back to the bullpen, but looking at the roster resource page, they slotted Luis Gil into Nestor Cortez's rotation spot. So,
yeah,
I don't know if that's the plan as of now. I didn't actually see anything on that, but Luis Gil is 39% rostered and pitched really well in the majors and has pitched well in the minors recently also.
Yeah, it was Cortez's turn. So I understand why Roster Resource did that. But, you know, Roster Resource doesn't have any insights, really. You know, they're just reacting to news the same way we are, and there's no indication that Cortez has lost his job in the starting rotation. There's no reason for him to. It's not like Luis Gil could possibly be more reliable than Cortez was. So my suspicion is that either they're just giving Gil one turn to give everybody a day of rest, or that they're planning to go six man for a while. Maybe it kind of depends on how Gil performs, but I wouldn't be so quick to drop Cortez because of this news.
Well, would you be looking to add Luis Gil? I guess it also kind of depends on the extent of this Gerrit Cole hamstring injury, because if he has to go on the IL, then, you know, that means Gil is probably staying, and so is Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, not super motivated to add Gil yet. It would make a difference if he performs well on Wednesday and doesn't get sent down right away. Then I'll be more interested. You know, if you have a roster spot to play with, it doesn't hurt to add him in case that comes to be. I mean, the little bit we've seen of him in the majors so far has gone pretty well.
A few other call-ups I wanted to ask you about. Mike Bowman with the Baltimore Orioles. Someone I believe Nando is in on. I think he's on his team in your Scott White Dynasty League. And then Josh Lambert. I think that's his first name. Josh Lambert with the White Sox. He was called up and he was at the Oakland A's on Tuesday. 5 innings, 1 run, 2 strikeouts. Anything to see here with Mike Bowman or Josh Lambert? I really hope that's his name.
Jimmy Lambert.
Jimmy Lambert, Josh. It's pretty close, right? It starts with a
Jimmy.
Jimmy, good old Jimmy boy.
Yes. You know, they're not nobody prospects, but they're not particularly high end either. Mike Bowman had particularly good numbers in 2019. He had 10.3 K per nine between high class A and double A. His numbers this year between three levels, you know, barely a strikeout per inning, 3.44 ERA, 1.15 whip. Pretty good fastball, pretty good slider. I can see it going either way for him. It's not like he has anything really like eye popping in his arsenal, but at the same time, good enough that he's worth monitoring. I have less hope for Jimmy Lambert, really. His strikeout rate, at least this year, was pretty good in the minors, but doesn't have quite the same pedigree as Mike Bowman. So yeah, his start against the Athletics on Tuesday was pretty good, but 2 strikeouts at 5 innings. I believe he had just 3-4 swinging strikes on 70 pitches. So I don't know. Nothing that's really making me jump out of my seat for Lambert either.
Yeah, and if Lance Lynn or Lucas Giolito or both of them return, then we probably don't have a spot for Lambert in the rotation. But a few prospects there. Let's monitor them. Again, Luis Gil, the highest profile of the names here. So let's see what he does on Wednesday. Let's take a quick break. When we return, do these pitchers matter? Talk about it. Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Let's start with Eric Lauer, who was up against the Phillies on Tuesday. 7 shutout innings with 5 strikeouts to just 1 walk. That's back-to-back 7-inning starts against the Giants and the Phillies. So, I mean, 2 pretty good offenses there. Eric Lauer is 24% rostered. And a lot of what we're going to do now is looking at next week. What do the matchups say? And as of now, it looks like Lauer is at the Detroit Tigers, which is pretty good. Does Eric Lauer matter, Scott?
Because of the matchup, because of the time of year, I guess he does. Now, prior to these back-to-back 7-inning starts, Lauer had gone 5 innings for less or less in 6 starts. So it's a very new thing, him going deep enough that we even care about him. He does have a 3.18 ERA on the year, almost a strikeout per inning, but also a 4.30 xFIP. So I don't really... If we're just grading Lauer on ability, I don't think there's enough there. But if you need a hot hand this time of year with a good matchup, then I guess he matters.
How about AJ Alexia? I probably could have included him in our previous segment talking about a few prospect pitchers being called up, but
yes,
he made a start on Monday against the Angels. 6 shutout, only gave up 1 hit, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. He had 11 swinging strikes on 85 pitches. And he was having a great season in the minors between AA and AAA, a 1.66 ERA, 1.02 whip, 76 strikeouts over 65 innings pitched. He's 13% rostered. Early look at next week, I think he's at home against the Astros, so you don't love that, but you do like the start.
No, you don't love that matchup. I agree. That stinks because I do like Alexi. This is one I'm pretty excited about, actually. You mentioned the great numbers he had in the minors this year. Between 2 major league starts now, combined 11 innings, he's allowed just 2 hits. He has, in his most recent start, fastball, three different pitches. Fastball, slider, I believe, and changeup. He threw at least 19% of the time. So to come in and have 3 pitches that he features that prominently is pretty good. Pretty good. Speaks well to his state, the stage of development he's in. And the swinging strike rate has been decent since arriving in the majors as well. The walks have been high, 5 and 11 innings, and the walks were an issue in the minors as well. So, you know, that's something to monitor. Also, he's a bit more of a fly ball pitcher than a ground ball pitcher, which is dangerous, but AL West is the division to do that in. So I can see things continuing to play out nicely for AJ Alexi, but I agree. I don't know if that against the Astros is really the time to test it. That said, if he does have a good start against the Astros, you know, you really have something here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they have so many pitchers coming in and out of the rotation right now for Texas that I don't know that they'll ever have the ability to have a 2-star pitcher. I mean, rest of season. So that obviously limits his upside for AJ Alexi. But yeah, very good start on Monday. Excuse me. Let's see what happens there moving forward. Packy Naughton. Who is that guy? He was at the Padres on Tuesday. 5 shutout with 5 strikeouts. He had 10 swinging strikes on 72 pitches. First start completing 5 innings. Does Packy Naughton matter, Scott?
Not on my team. Is where I would put Packy Naughton. No, I mean, 4.90 ERA in the minors this year. Really, no part of his stat line is good. And I just, the stuff doesn't look particularly impressive. I think he's just a guy.
All right, last one here. Drew Rasmussen, he was at the Red Sox on Monday. 5 innings, 1 run, and 2 strikeouts over his last 5 starts. He has a 1.65 ERA. Does not give you many strikeouts, but the ratios have looked pretty good during that 5-start stretch. Doesn't go more than 5 innings, but I mean, it's probably more for like deeper roto category leagues. He's just providing ratios. Does Drew Rasmussen matter?
You know, I spent a little bit of time trying to figure this out because 1 earned run or fewer in all 5 of his starts since joining the Rays rotation. He came over with JP Fireison in the Willie Adames trade with the Brewers. Good ground ball rate, but not like an amazing Ranger Suarez ground ball rate that would allow me to overlook the low swinging strike rate and not so great strikeout rate either. So I'm not really buying Drew Rasmussen, but yeah, I'm not really buying it. I get that there's been a string of success here and he pitches for the Rays, but that's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Pitching for the Rays, because you never know when they're going to yank you around either.
Yep. Definitely fair there. Do these hitters matter? Let's start with Austin Hayes, who went 1-for-3 with his 16th home run of the season on Tuesday. And over his last 15 games, he's batting .358 with 3 home runs. He's 32% rostered. Scott, does Austin Hayes matter? Are you interested in adding him?
So his playing time has been less than every day. And I know his splits favor lefties. And let's see. Were they facing a lefty here on Wednesday?
They were not. They were going up against Jackson Kowar. And Hayes' home run came off of Jackson Kowar. So
I think there were 5 lefties scheduled for the Orioles this week. And I thought about including Hayes among my sleeper hitters. But I did not. The playing time has been more consistent lately.
Yeah, he started in 9 straight games.
But I don't know. I don't really think he matters because even though you could make the case, okay, his splits are better against lefties, so he's a good matchups guy. They're still not that good against lefties. So, yeah, I just don't think the production is quite enough, even if, apart from having 16 homers, I mean, he has a .299 on base percentage, you know?
Yeah, doesn't walk very much. He's right around a .250 batting average for the season. He's been better the past month or so for the Baltimore Orioles. So I think probably in 5 outfielder leagues, maybe he matters there if you're desperate. But yeah, anything shallower than that, probably not the case for Austin Hayes. How about Lorenzo Cain? 2 more hits on Tuesday. 31 games since coming off the IL. He's batting .281, 4 homers, 7 steals. Problem, similar to Austin Hayes before this recent stretch, is that Cain sits out every third or fourth game, usually. He's only 20% rostered. There's only 5 games on the schedule next week. So those things are playing against him. But when he's been on the field, he's been productive.
Yeah, it's just too much missed time.
Yeah.
You know, Hayes has been playing a lot more consistently recently, but Cain has started 6 of 10 for the Brewers. And it's just really hard to make an impact when you're doing that, especially if you're not like this monstrous power hitter or really prolific base stealer. You're just kind of you're just somebody who's kind of pretty good at a few things. I just 15 team leagues probably is all you're talking about for Cain.
Bobby Dalbec pinch hit in the 8th inning on Tuesday. The Red Sox were down 12-1, so they get some of their stars out of the game. He pinch hits for Rafael Devers. Hits 2 home runs in 2 innings, Bobby Dalbec does, and he's now started 8 of the last 10 games for them. Over his last 30 games overall, .341 batting average, 9 homers for Bobby Dalbec. He is red hot, 40% rostered. What do you think here, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, he's finally hot when they're not making an effort to play him with a great amount of consistency. So
8 of the last 10 games he started. I mean, that's better than it has been, basically.
Yeah, but Schwarber got another start at first base. This was his 3rd start since coming over to the Red Sox. And you feel like those are going to have to happen more often. I don't know. I guess if you're just looking for home runs, you could do worse than Dalbec. But I don't know. It's been a little inconsistent, the playing time.
It looks like for next week, 3 games against the Orioles, 3 games against the Mariners. Not really scared of either pitching staff. I don't know what it looks like in terms of how many lefties they're scheduled to face for next week, but just in terms of pitching staffs and pretty good matchups there for Bobby Dalbec. I did want to bring up Ian Happ once again because we've talked about him quite a bit recently, but I feel like his roster rate is still lagging behind. He went 3-for-4 again on Tuesday, added another home run. He's now up to 20. And over his last 30 games, Ian Happ is batting .321, 9 homers, 2 steals. His last 15 games, he's batting .400. So, I mean, the guy is hot right now. Band of misfits with the Chicago Cubs. Frank Schwindel, Rafael Ortega, Patrick Wisdom. These guys are all performing pretty well. Does Ian Happ need to be rostered in more leagues, Scott? Is he a must-add, Ian Happ?
I wouldn't go quite so far as to say must-add. Like, 3 outfielder leagues, certainly not points leagues with as much as he strikes out.
52% rostered is where he's at right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's low for as hot as he is. He is still striking out way too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, his BABIP is through the roof during this stretch. But we know he could send balls out of the park, and he hadn't done so enough this year until this recent stretch of having hit 9 home runs in 23 games. So definitely falls into the category of a hot hand play, and there's no shame in rolling with that this time of year. So I would say that he is being a bit undervalued because of that. But again, if we're talking long term, I'd be less enthusiastic about him.
Scott, where would Ian Happ compare against these outfielders in shallower leagues? Because Tyler O'Neill, he's 74% rostered, but he's coming back around. His last 7 games, 11 hits, 2 homers, 1 steal. Anthony Santander, his last 30 games. We talk about Santander quite a bit. He's been performing well. .277 batting average, 8 home runs. He's 59% rostered. How would you rank Santander, O'Neill, and Ian Happ?
So Santander, if you go the last 30 games, the numbers are still pretty good, but he's cooled off the last couple weeks. He's gone ice cold again. The thing about a no-walk guy like Santander is when they're not hitting well, they're doing nothing for you. Mm-hmm. So he's third for me here. O'Neill's first. O'Neill's first, Happ second. Santander third. O'Neill still has, strikes out way too much, but just incredible Statcast data otherwise, how hard he hits the ball. His expected slug is .566. It's almost 50 points higher than his actual slug. And for as much as he strikes out, his expected batting average is right in line with actual marks. So he's pretty much doing what he's supposed to be doing from what we can tell.
All right, let's fire up the drop-o-meter here on a Wednesday. I mean, we're getting to the point of the season again where you can pretty much drop anybody unless they have a good matchup. But Eduardo Rodriguez, he does what he does. He reels me in. He reels me in. And then he just drops one of these right on my head. A good old stinker up against Tampa. Gives up 6 runs over 3 2/3 innings. He is 88% rostered still. What is the drop-o-meter on Eduardo Rodriguez?
I mean, I don't like throwing around tens, but this time of year, I feel like I can throw around a lot of tens because I don't feel like you could trust him. And it's been a year-long frustration because his xFIP, even after this start, is .347. I mean, it's pretty good. I want to say that would be top 10 among qualifiers. This is a pretty good xFIP. But there's just been, I feel like there's something we're missing here, some yet to be discovered analytical tool that could help explain what's happening to Eduardo Rodriguez this year, because the performance just hasn't come anywhere close to that. 3 of his previous 4 starts prior to this one were quality starts, but this one was so bad, it just negates all the good. Yep.
And the thing is, I would imagine many people had Eduardo Rodriguez on the bench for those starts, right? And then you throw him back right in for one like this, where last time out he performed well against Tampa, and then he puts up that stinker. But hold your horses here, Scott. It looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week against the Orioles and the Mariners.
Oh, gosh.
So should we turn that 10?
All right.
back into a zero.
I know you're going to give me the sneak attack here.
I didn't know either. I just looked up his matchups.
Should have led with that. I don't enjoy analysis this time of year. I'm trying to have my usual level of enthusiasm, but it just feels like you're throwing darts, you know?
Yeah.
Those matchups are so freaking good, and there's two of them. I think in points leagues, you probably have to hold on. I don't know that I could trust him in a categories league unless the categories I was chasing were wins and strikeouts.
Yep.
But I think in a points league, you have to hold on. So we'll drop that 10 to a 5.
How about Tarek Skubal? He only threw 3 innings on Monday, which there was no indication that they were going to do this. And, I mean, they've done this now with some of their younger pitchers in the rotation. But he only threw 50 pitches. He's still 77% rostered. If you're looking to add one of these starting pitchers that are emerging here late, Scott, would you be okay dropping Tarek Skubal?
Yeah, I wish I knew what the plan was for him.
Yeah, there was no, like, they didn't say anything about it, like why they did it. I would have to assume it's just the Tigers are out of it. They're limiting their younger pitchers.
Do you have like names? You could give me some more specific names here
that
you match up against Skubal.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mentioned, would you do it for like Eric Lauer, who we mentioned before?
No.
Would you do it for, let's see, let's pull up the most added starting pitchers. Man, the Bailey Ober thing is so annoying because like they piggybacked Michael Pineda with him and he was pitching well. So obviously,
right,
you can't add Ober now, but that's frustrating. Would you drop Skubal for Joe Ryan?
No.
How about, no. I mean, Ranger Suarez is still out there in like a third of CBS leagues.
And it looks like his next two matchups, since that's the game we're playing here now, Ranger Suarez's next two matchups versus Colorado versus the Cubs. So Ranger Suarez, I mean, been saying it for a few weeks now. Ranger Suarez, I would take over most any pitcher you'd consider dropping, but that's especially true looking at those matchups.
All right, so that's a slam dunk, right? We'll drop Skubal for him.
Yeah.
How about, would you do it for Jake Odorizzi with those two starts next week?
If that was the way to get Odorizzi's two starts on your roster, yeah, I could do that.
All right, last one I'll ask you about. Adrian Hauser threw a 3-hit shutout over the weekend. Would you drop Tarek Skubal for him?
I would not, because that was such an outlier innings-wise for Suarez. I had no idea he was capable of going more than 6.
How about Zach Gallen? He was at the Rangers on Tuesday, 6 2/3, 3 runs, 8 strikeouts to 0 walks. That looks all fine and good. Only 10 swinging strikes in this start. Fastball velo down 1.9 miles per hour in this one. Curveball down 1.6 miles per hour. Still 85% rostered to Zach Gallen. Early projection for next week at the Dodgers at the Astros. Yikes.
Yeah. Bad matchups, and I still really don't know what's going on with him. Obviously, this Rangers matchup, this Rangers lineup, he should have been able to carve up, and he barely came away with a quality start. It was looking pretty rough early on, actually. So he has had 4 decent starts in a row. I'm not ready to put my faith in him, though, yet, especially with those matchups.
So if you're not starting him in a 2-start week in a points league again in those matchups, which are tough matchups, would you just drop him?
The case could be made, though it's because he's Zach Gallen, and because, like I said, the last 4 starts have been pretty good, and maybe he is back on track, and I'm just too worried about him having a sprained elbow, kind of like we were talking about with Jacob deGrom earlier. I worry about him falling into the wrong hands and then beating you, because he's Zach Gallen, you know? I'm reluctant to drop him. I don't think it's not unthinkable. I actually have dropped him in a league, you know, one of my shallower leagues already this year, but it's not something I'm eager to do.
Where'd you put him on the drop-o-meter?
Okay. Let's go with 4.
All right, last name here, Kyle Freeland. He was up against the Giants on Monday. Gave up 7 runs over 4 1/3, and it looks like the wheels are kind of falling off here for him. He's dealing with the hip injury.
But yeah, I feel like such a sucker. I feel, yeah, he did have a hip injury that he was coming back from. And so we don't know exactly how much that impacted him in this start. But, you know, I've been saying over and over, you can't trust Kyle Freeland. Rockies pitcher, not enough of a bat misser, you know, too much of a fly ball pitcher. Can't trust him, can't trust him, can't trust him. After a dozen starts where Kyle Freeland did this, he succeeded. He had like a 250 ERA over that 12-start stretch. Finally said, okay, I guess maybe now you can use him. And then, of course, this happens. So I don't know what lesson to take from that. Just be totally obstinate and never change your mind about a player, no matter how many good starts he puts together. I don't know if that's the right lesson to take, but man, that stinks. That's annoying.
Yep. So are you cool dropping him?
Yes, 10.
Oh, right. Some odds and ends from the last 2 days. Aaron Civale made his return, and he was up against the Twins. 4 2/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts to 1 walk, 8 swinging strikes on 78 pitches. Velocity down a little bit across the board. Nothing overly worrisome here. What'd you think of this return for Civale?
I thought it was great. Happy to get him back in the lineup.
Yeah.
We're running out of trustworthy starting pitchers here, so it's nice to get one back.
Marcus Semien went 2 for 3 with his 38th home run on Tuesday. He now has 6 home runs over his last 6 games. I want to talk about someone who's going to be fun to rank for next year. I think Marcus Semien is one of those players. Steven Matz was at the Yankees, 6 innings, 1 run. He had 6 strikeouts to 0 walks. He only had 6 swinging strikes on 93 pitches, gave up 12 hard hit balls. So seems like he was a little bit lucky in this one. But over his last 5 starts, he's got a 1.61 ERA. Swinging strike rate is abysmal. Mm-hmm. He's getting ground balls. He's limiting hard contact. He's still 84% rostered, so I don't know if there's much you could do here, but are you buying any of this, Scott?
No. I feel like Kyle Freeland all over again. Not only is the swinging strike rate bad for Matz, but 18 strikeouts over 28 innings during that stretch. I just don't think in the long run that's a formula for success. And this is, even as a hot hand play, I don't feel prepared to trust Matz.
Mike Zunino had a double dong on Tuesday and basically having the year that we wanted Gary Sanchez to have. Sanchez has been okay, but nothing crazy. Zunino, 29 homers on the year, .211 batting average, and .867 OPS, 73% rostered. So maybe he's floating around in some shallow leagues, but he's still not very exciting. He's very home run dependent. Nelson Cruz, he's getting hot at the right time. 4 for 5 with a double dong. He's now up to 30 home runs. He has 4 home runs over his last 4 games. Ozzie Albies, also hot right now. 2 for 3 with his 27th home run. Has 5 homers over his last 7 games. Last week, fouled the ball off of his knee. Had to get carried off of the field. Crossing our fingers that he's okay and that he could return for the weekend series in Coors Field. He did just that, and that man is hot, Ozzie Albies. Wade Miley, bounce back performance at the Cubs. 7 innings, 1 run. 8 strikeouts to 0 walks. 21 swinging strikes. I didn't look this up, but I'd be willing to bet that was a season high for Wade Miley in this one.
Yes. His previous high was 15. And so 21. Now it was against the Cubs, who, you know, it's kind of, their lineup is kind of a quadruple A all-star team right now. So keep that in mind. But I would venture to say it's a career high in swinging strikes for Wade Miley, though that would take even longer to look up.
Yeah, definitely possible. He was fired up for this one. I mean, his velocity was up between 1.3 and 2.1 miles per hour on all 5 of his pitches that he threw. So, yeah. He was,
nice.
Fired up for this one.
It's nice to know he's still among the trustworthy.
Christian Yelich went 3 for 5 with a double and 2 RBI. Over his last 26 games, he's batting .340, 2 homers, 8 doubles, 1 steal, a 21% strikeout rate, 29% line drive rate. So putting the ball in the air more, he's hitting line drives. It's just kind of empty batting average. I mean, it's nice to see the batting average, but it's good in like a David Fletcher kind of way, I guess. So I didn't think we would say that about Christian Yelich this year, but here we are, September 8th. Aaron Nola, he still stinks. He was at the Brewers, 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs. He had 6 strikeouts. The velocity was up about a mile per hour on 4 of 5 pitches. He threw a cutter 8 times in the start, which is the most he's thrown that pitch since his second start of the season. So it seems like he's just searching for anything right now, Scott. So, I mean, to pull the cutter out of nowhere, I mean, I think he's just searching. Like his fast.
This wasn't a terrible start.
I mean, it wasn't good, though. 3 runs over 5 innings. I don't know.
You could get a win out of that start, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I'm let down by it if I have Aaron Nola.
Here's the thing. We're with most of September. Okay, so a guy has a 113 whip, and with most of September still to go, 192 strikeouts. How are you feeling about that guy?
Well, I noticed
that's all you know. 113 whip and 192 strikeouts at this point in the season.
I'd feel very good about that. I'd say he's probably a top 15, top 20 starting pitcher.
It's just that darn ERA for Aaron Nola, bringing him down. But no, it's the same thing we've been saying all along. You still see a lot of ability there. And I continue to say I'm going down with the ship. Down with the ship. Ride Nola till the end.
I have a feeling, Scott, that Aaron Nola is someone that you'll be looking to buy the dip on in next year's drafts.
Yep.
If we do get him at a discount, which as of now, I think that we will. Alex Bregman went 3-for-5 with his 8th home run of the season. It was his first home run since coming off of the IL and in 11 games since returning. He's batting .357. He only has 3 strikeouts in 11 games.
I know.
So he's putting
noticed that too.
It's crazy. And he's hitting the ball extremely hard. Lots of line drives, lots of fly balls. We might be in for a really strong finish here from Alex Bregman. So if you've held on or if someone dropped him in your league and you picked him up, everything, the underlying numbers say that big things could be coming for Alex Bregman. Pete Alonso, a double dong. He's now up to 32 homers. And over his last 8 games, he has 15 hits and he has 3 home runs over his last 2 games. So a strong finish looking like for Pete Alonso as well. And Zach Wheeler bounced back on Monday. 6 shutout, 5 hits, 0 walks, 9 strikeouts. So we've been waiting for a nice little bounce back here for Wheeler, and we got it. It was a really nice start. Call to the bullpen. Some bullpen updates from the past couple of days. For the Twins, Alex Colome has 2 saves over the last 2 days. He's now up to 13 saves for the season. Let's check in on what his roster rate is, but I know it could be ugly at times, but he is getting saves, Alex Colome.
He is.
46% rostered. I think that number needs to be higher, given the situation. For the Pirates, on Tuesday, David Bednar pitched in the 8th inning to face 3, 4, and 5 in the lineup. In a 1-run lead, Chris Stratton came in for the 9th. He picked up his 3rd save. David Bednar picked up the save on Monday. So is it just Bednar is the highest leverage? He's going to face the heart of the lineup whenever they're coming up kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so, because they keep going back and forth with using him in the 8th. Him and Stratton flipping back and forth. It's annoying because they're not getting that many save opportunities to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. I Bednar's good, though. I think he's a good pitcher. I mean, you watch him. He's got some pretty filthy stuff. So I like the guy, but the Pirates, it doesn't look like they're going to lean on just one pitcher for now. For the Reds, a team that has been all over the place all season long, Michael Lorenzen gave up 2 earned runs in the 8th inning on Tuesday. Michael Givens picked up his 6th save, and he has their last 2 saves, but do not trust David Bell as far as I could throw him. Is that the saying? Trust someone as far as they could throw them? Something like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, David Bell, I mean, I'm not all that strong, so I don't think I could throw him very far.
Well, that's the point of the saying.
I'm happy we explained it. Anyway, the point of this is that the Reds are super frustrating, as are the Seattle Mariners. On Tuesday, Drew Steckenrider in the 7th in a 1-run lead. Diego Castillo was used in the 8th. Paul Sewald in the 9th inning in a 2-run lead. Paul Sewald has been awesome, right? He gives up a 2-run home run to Alex Bregman. Who gets the next save opportunity for the Mariners?
Steckenrider, I would guess.
I think Diego Castillo got a save over the weekend, too, so I don't know. The Mariners, the Royals. Well, the Royals have been pretty consistent now with Scott Barlow, but the Mariners, the Reds. I mean, it's been a mess. And you know what else has been a mess? The Boston Red Sox. I wasn't really expecting this. On Monday, Adam Ottavino was using the 7th inning in a 2-run game. He gave up an RBI single, cuts the lead down to 1. He's now been used in the seventh inning in two of his last three appearances for the Red Sox. Garrett Whitlock came in the ninth in a one-run lead. He gives up a game-tying inside-the-park home run, of all things, to Austin Meadows. And he actually picked up a save over the weekend, Garrett Whitlock. So do you have any feel for what's going on with the Red Sox right now?
Well, I know that Adam Ottavino had an ugly blown save on Friday, I believe it was Saturday. So it doesn't surprise me that they're now, you know, trying other options, looking into Whitlock, it seems like. But I don't know how firm that is. And obviously, at some point, Matt Barnes is going to come back from the COVID IL and muddy the waters further.
Yep.
So, you know, I thought Adam Ottavino, I hoped he'd have the job on lockdown until then, but it seems as if that's not the case.
Yeah. I mentioned in my home points league, I picked up Ottavino over Colome last week. Colome's still available. I'm definitely going to make that swap. So,
yeah.
If you play in any make that change if you play in any shallower leagues, it's a move you should make. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Wednesday. I didn't write these down, so bear with me. I'm just going to run through some scheduled starters for Wednesday. All right, what do we got here? Tyler Anderson at the Astros? No. John Gray, we already said no. How about Luke Weaver at home against the Rangers?
No.
Wait. How about Mitch Keller and Matt Manning, who are going up against each other, the Tigers and the Pirates?
No.
All right. Maybe this one, Rich Hill at the Marlins coming off a 6-inning start.
I mean, that's the best one so far, but I don't want to do it.
All right. How about Mike Minor at the Orioles?
That might be better than hell.
I don't know. I think I would go with Rich Hill, but I mean, whatever. They're like old lefties.
I don't like either. I mean,
yeah. Luis Gil at home against the Blue Jays.
Seems pretty risky.
Yeah, it does. Tuki Toussaint at home against the Nationals.
I mean, I know his last start at Colorado was pretty bad, but this might be the best one.
Vladimir Gutierrez at the Cubs.
He's been pretty shaky all of a sudden, too.
Pretty shaky indeed.
And it was against the Tigers and the Marlins. So, yeah, I think I'll pass on Vladimir Gutierrez.
Oh, I completely whiffed on this one. Joe Ryan at Cleveland. Cool with that?
I mean, I don't know how deep he's going to go, and obviously, he's just made the one start, right?
Yeah, 5 innings, 3 runs.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think Tuki Toussaint would be my first choice.
All right. Yeah. I mean, Tuki is out there. I like the matchup for Joe Ryan. I like the matchup for Rich Hill. So if you're in a deeper daily lineup league, those are some names I would look at for Thursday. Let's see who we got here. Ronaldo Lopez at the A's. Probably not.
No.
How about Randy Dobnak at Cleveland?
Mm-mm.
Probably not. How about Jesus Luzardo hosting the Mets?
That one's okay.
How about, slam dunk here, Ranger Suarez hosting the Rockies?
Ding, ding, ding. That's the one.
Ding, ding. Let's do it. How about Carlos Hernandez at the Orioles?
Yeah, that's pretty good too.
Well, ESPN still has Nestor Cortez starting on Thursday against the Blue Jays. I don't know if that is actually going to happen, but if it does, would you use him there?
Probably not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, let's wrap up there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Friday. Remember, there's no podcast on Thursday. See you then. Bye-bye. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property, it's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.